There are men who maintain important records of the history of the 20th century, but do not include any records by Catel. And then there's Adam Bernstein and Doug Bost, two men who should have better things to do, but aren't doing them right now. These are two grown-ass men, with special guest grown-ass man, Jamar Nicholas.
Grown-ass men.
Hey, it's another Grown-Ass Men episode, and this week it's the first of the conversations that we were able to start at the New York Comic-Con. We walked through Artist Alley at Comic-Con, and it was exciting to see all the talented people who I've only seen their names in books, and now, you know, there they were. And, of course, we had on our giant purple Galactus hats, so they were willing to speak with us. One of the artists that we spoke to was Jamar Nicholas. Jamar is a writer, an illustrator, and an educator, and he adapted a story by Jeffrey Canada called Fist, Stick, Knife, Gun. And Jamar was nice enough to talk to us by phone.
Hello, Jamar.
Hey,
how are you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you pretty well. This is Doug and Adam.
You're on the phone with grown-ass men. You're originally from Philly.
Yep, born and raised.
So, I mean, before we start to get into some of your books, and we both just read Fist, Stick, Knife, Gun.
It's a mouthful. Right?
Yeah, it is. I mean, I know I loved it intensely. I know Doug did too. But
it's
before we get into that, like, did you buy comic books, you know, as a kid?
Yeah. I was, kind of without getting too deep into my origin story, I was a big comic strip fan. Like, I wanted to be a newspaper comic strip artist when I was little, and I got into comics a little later. I would get the three pack of comics with the covers ripped off from the bodega in my neighborhood. So, and usually there were like a lot of Spider-Man, and maybe there was like one DC in there. And for the longest time, I didn't really know or connect that different people drew. I couldn't tell you the difference between a Buscema and a Ditko Spider-Man. And then kind of later on, I fell in love with comic books, but I didn't start off there.
What were the early strips that you liked?
I was a huge, and this is very odd because I really couldn't understand what I was reading, but I was just kind of in love with the line. Doonesbury was my first big comic strip.
Wow.
And, you know, I was way too young to be dealing with political issues, but I just love the way Trudeau kind of handled the panels that he was dealt with.
I love his feet, the features of all his characters, the noses and the
and that eye that's connected to the eyebrow, that whole thing. I love that stuff. And then later on, I got really deep in love with, and I always get in a little trouble with this. I love Andy Capp.
Uh-huh. Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm a huge Andy Capp fan, and again, I don't know if Andy Capp's still running. I'm assuming it is, maybe in the UK.
Somewhere.
But, you know, I work at a college, so I'm around a lot of, you know, college kids, and they just don't know much about certain things. And I was like, yeah, Andy Capp was a strip about a guy who would, you know, come home from work, go to the pub, come home and get into a fist fight with his wife, and then take a nap on the couch. So it's a strip about domestic violence, if you really think about it. That's the heart of it.
Well, when I was growing up, I grew up in Maine, and I was a paper boy. And so I would get the papers every morning, and I'd have to put them together and then go and deliver. But I was a procrastinator, so I would sit in my garage before I would deliver them and read the funnies. And so I read all those strips. They had Andy Capp and High and Lois and Hagar and Doonesbury and... So I would read those every day. You would get, every once in a while, you'd get like a serious strip in there, like Buzz Sawyer or Mark Trail or something. You know?
Yeah, the soap opera strips, like Apartment 3G or something.
Mary
like
Worth.
That.
So terrible. That's...
Yeah, we used to get the Daily News delivered on Sundays, and that was the only time it had the color comics.
Right.
And
right.
I remember those intensely. Dick Tracy. And Dondi. Do you remember Dondi?
Oh, Dondi, yeah. Dondi had a big influence on graffiti writers. There's a lot of Dondi work in like 80s graffiti. Yeah. We could talk about that too.
I really loved Fistic Knife Gun. I just think it's excellent. Can you tell us a little bit about how you came to create it?
Sure. Well, a quick backstory for the listeners. Fistic Knife Gun is, my version of it is a graphic adaptation of Jeffrey Canada's memoirs. And Jeff Canada is a educator who's most famous for running the Harlem Children's Zone.
Yes.
In New York. He just recently stepped down from that role, but he's still really involved in the school. And I think it might have been 2010. He was all over the news because he was in the Time 100 influential people, and that Waiting for Superman documentary had just come out about charter schools, and he was really a big part of that. The book is really about this guy who grew up in the 50s in the South Bronx. And he comes from an era of time, especially if you were a boy growing up in the city, where you had to solve your problems with violence. And it's still like that today. I think it's a lot different, and that's a big part of why the book appealed to me. So when this guy was a kid, just to survive on his block, he had to go through a case system of fighting the other boys in his neighborhood. And then once you get a little older, you fight the next group of kids, and then to the point where you go away to go to school in your neighborhood, you have to fight kids from other blocks. So it's all about this kind of like gladiator system of being tough. And even if you're not a tough kid, and most kids aren't really, and that's one of the secrets of a story like this, you kind of adapt to survive in your surroundings. So, you know, you take this kid who was just a scared boy, who winds up being this fighter just to survive in his own neighborhood. Then he grows up, and at one point you find out that people kind of stop having fist fights and you get to a certain age and now everybody has guns and people just shoot each other. But at some point, Jeff's publisher, Beacon Press, who put out the first book, contacted me and asked me if I'd be interested in doing an adaptation of his memoirs. So that's where the graphic novel came from. They just kind of came to me, and at first I kind of ignored it because I wasn't really sure it was real. You know how you get emails that aren't really to you, but they're just kind of like, hey, interested in an opportunity? I was like, I don't, you know, is this a Nigerian print scam? What is this?
Well, it's such a, I think your art is such a beautiful match for his story. You capture that character, and it's so interesting to see him age through your book.
Mm. Yeah, it's amazing.
Thank you.
And also, you're handling very adult ideas from a real kid's point of view, and you keep that point of view no matter what, which through the art, which I think is really complements the story beautifully.
Oh, wow. Thanks a lot. I really appreciate that. Even though you don't really see a lot of New York in the book because it's packed pretty tight and it goes fast, I wanted you to feel like it was authentic. So there was a part. I went to Harlem a couple of times to meet with Jeff, and then we got in his car and drove over to the Bronx and went through his old neighborhood. And it's really interesting that the apartment he grew up in isn't there anymore. It's a school. And, you know, we went over to the PS99, his old school. And what was really cool is I tried to really put myself in the shoes of a kid. So when we were in front of the school, I got down on my knees and took camera shots of it in the perspective of being a kid looking up at your school. So, you know, you have a different perspective when you're an adult standing in front of a place that you grew up in, like, wow, I thought this kitchen was so much bigger when I was little. You know what I mean? Your perspective changes. So there was a lot of that, and just, you know, just trying to get the soul right with it. You know, I'm friends with a lot of comic book artists, and, you know, there's a lot of guys that can draw the hell out of somebody getting punched through a brick wall. And, you know, that's great. And that's great, but I don't really do that kind of work, so to speak. So, yeah, I want you to be able to feel some sort of empathy when little Jeff goes to the store to get a can of pork and beans for his mother, and then gets mugged in an alley. You know, I want you to feel this kid's fear in his eyes, and just the whole kind of like a hopelessness there, which I think is really, really deep.
Yeah, well, that's actually, the eyes and all the characters are some of the most telling parts. You really see what's going on with the characters in their eyes.
Well, thank you.
I mean, I actually, it's funny. I grew up in Brooklyn, and I would say, my school, experiences weren't that rough. But, on the street where I lived, where it was really much more class diverse, I didn't have it like this guy did, but I tasted it, and it was still early enough, because I was born in 64, so I'm experiencing the streets for the first time, 1970, 71, 72 in Brooklyn, and it was tough, and I was not a fighter, man, at all, It freaked me out.
Yeah. So how did you survive through that?
I used to run.
Just run for it. Run for us. Yeah.
I was really, really much faster than a lot of people.
What connected me to the project in the first place was when I read the first book that the story was built off of. I went, wow, man, I went through the same stuff, almost not all of those scenarios, but a lot of them in West Philly in the 70s and the 80s growing up. So right there's the whole idea of this book being important is that nothing's really changed and actually things have gotten worse. So what are we going to do about it? But I tell people often that I hated childhood. That was one of the worst parts of my life, was being a kid and not having options and having to just go out into the street and deal with other kids who, they weren't, especially city kids, they're not nice.
I can feel the sort of oppressive panels that you have where your characters are trapped in these, in the illustrations you have, because they're trapped on those streets. There's a really lovely but very sad chapter. I think it's chapter 4 about Butchie.
Oh, Butchie, yeah.
And it's such a beautiful story. It's about, he's like this big sort of local kid who's got some problems, like who knows what his problems are exactly. The kids don't know. He's just a little slow. And one day the kids just brutalize him and just beat the crap out of him against a car. And then at the end of it, they go about their business like nothing happened.
Right. Right. It was like punching the clock.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Yeah.
That's a really tough lesson to tell. I would tell people about some of the things I grew up with or grew up seeing, and people didn't believe me. Like, there's a lot of disbelief back when I used to talk about stuff like this, and now with cell phone cameras and things like that, and you can kind of see how brutal children are. Like, you wouldn't believe that unless you saw a pack of kids just preying on somebody. And, stuff like that happens.
Jeffrey Canada was sort of able to, he certainly got out of that. He went to Harvard.
Oh,
Bowdoin, yes.
Mm-hmm. I think he was at Harvard or something else like that later on. Right. But the difference between leaving his community and going up to Maine to school and then coming back, it's such a huge difference. Finding out, it's like, well, hey, man, there's a whole other world out here, and why are we kind of like destroying ourselves in this one little kind of fish tank we live in?
Right. What's interesting about that is that, I don't know a lot about Jeffrey Canada, but the fact that he actually got out and succeeded is interesting, because I used to work with some inner city kids at this Zen center where I used to belong, and a few of them had gotten scholarships to get out of the city and actually go to good colleges, these were brilliant musical kids. who like really lived in crappy environments and hardly any parental, you know, guidance. I mean, you know the story. And like, and they decided to not go to college because they just like the idea of like leaving it all behind. They were afraid.
Right. And that's a great thing to bring up, because I think that's the unseen other hand to poverty, where you kind of grow up in a place where there really isn't something better on the, you know, on the other end, because that's all you know. So why would you save up to move to something, you know, that's foreign? You know, I know the devil here. So I'll deal with that devil versus going somewhere else where I don't know anything.
Your next book sounds really cool, but I have not read it yet. It's not out yet.
No, it's still on my table. Yeah.
It's called Leon, Protector of the Playground.
Yes. Leon, Protector of the Playground is my next book. This is the story of a sixth grade superhero who comes from a single superhero household. So imagine Wonder Woman or someone of that type is kind of like the big cheese in the city, and her kid would be Leon, and everybody in the city knows who he is, so he doesn't have a secret identity, or you know, there's no scenes where he's changing costumes in a locker or something like that. He just goes to school in his uniform because everybody knows who he is, and at recess he protects the other kids in school, and there's little crazy villains who have very punny names, like Broccoli Rob is one of my favorite villains.
Nice.
Who was a kid who got cursed by a broccoli wizard and now is stuck as a living crown of broccoli, and he's very bitter about it.
Very bitter. Sure.
Yeah, and I got a million of them. So, but yeah, the book's coming along really nicely, and I'm really excited about it. And yeah, I can't wait for everybody to read it.
Great. I can't wait to read it either.
Are you putting it out yourself, or who's putting it out?
Yeah, well, this was a part of a Kickstarter that me and some of my virtual comic book partners put out a while ago. And what's going to happen at first is that I'm just going to fulfill the backer pledges and give them their books, and then I'm going to have some left over. But I'm in talks with I have a literary agent who's very excited about trying to put this in front of some book publishers.
Yeah.
So, you know, the future's bright. Fistic Knife Gun is kind of a hard sell because, you know, it's not Batman, right? So it's pretty heavy topic, but at the same time, you're not exactly sure what it is until you start reading it. So I'm really glad that it spoke to you.
And what a great title.
No, I know, right? Isn't that great? And one other thing I wanted to add is that talking about trying to just kind of open the gates to other people about this book, when people haven't heard of Jeff Canada, it's kind of like, well, why should I read this? Why should I care about this book?
Yeah.
So sometimes I have to just say it's about this one guy, but yeah, it's more a bigger story about what it means to grow up in this environment and to get out of it. So when I was creating the look for Jeff, I wanted it to look like Jeff Canada, but not be right on the nose with him. Like I wanted him to kind of be accessible to everybody, for you to be kind of empathetic to this kid and almost like forget that Jeff Canada is a real guy who lives in New York now. But it's like, oh, wow, this kid had it rough. I really feel for him. And put yourself in those shoes. So that was really important when I was creating the look of everything.
And it's also, I was telling my daughter is 9, and I was telling her about your book, and I was describing the early chapter where Jeff's brother gets his coat stolen.
Yeah, his older brother.
And
they go
home to mom, and rather than being understanding and taking their side, she says, you got to go get that coat back. Which is fantastic. And it was an interesting conversation with my daughter about, like, why did she do that? Why did the mom do that? And, you know, what responsibility do these other kids have for each other? And how much responsibility does the, you know, do they have to give up to the parent? So I think that even beyond city life, like, it's about growing up.
Right. That's such a great part of the book, and I'm really glad that was the first chapter, where that's such a landing point for a lot of people. And I've talked to people who come into my tables at conventions, and we'll talk about that experience. So, say they're another, person they grew up in the city, and I'll say, well, when you were that age and something like that happened to you, what did your mother do? And we share a laugh. Oh, my mother told me to go outside and pick up a brick and hit that kid over the head and get my coat back. And you kind of laugh about it, but I said, yeah, and that's kind of the sad part of all of this, is that we're all raised in violence and solving our problems with violence. And one of the weird corollaries about superhero comics is they solve their problems with violence. So sometimes it's hard for me to kind of understand why everybody celebrates heroes, but they forget that Wolverine has sharp knives on the edges of his hands that he stabs people with. We just kind of leave that part out.
Yeah, that's his built-in way of solving everything is by killing people.
Right. But, isn't he cool? Oh, wait a minute. Why is Johnny running around with knives in the kitchen? He's playing Wolverine. No. We can't do that.
All right. Fist, stick, knife, gun. Jamar, Nicholas, thank you very much. Really, thank you so much for talking to us.
Oh, thank you, guys.
At the Comic-Con, and just great to talk to you tonight.
Thanks. I had a lot of fun, and hopefully I can come back on and talk about Leon when it's out.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely. That would be great.
Thanks again to Jamar Nicholas for talking to us. Everybody should buy a copy of Fist, Stick, Knife, Gun. You can get it on Amazon or at your local comic store. And we'll see you next time.
Grown-ass men.